Blog Talk Radio.
From the directors of Reservoir Dogs, Desperado, Pulp Fiction, From Dusk Till Dawn, Once Upon a Time in Mexico, Kill Bill, and Sin City, Tarantino and Rodriguez are back. Only this time, they're back to back with a double feature that'll tear you in two. First,
I got bit.
Bit by what?
If I told you, you probably wouldn't believe me.
Robert Rodriguez, Planet Terror.
Made you something. Open that door, will you, baby?
Plus,
fair lady,
your chariot awaits.
Quentin Tarantino's Death Proof.
Do I frighten you? Is it my scar?
Two no holds barred feature length motion pictures for the price of one. Planet Terror and Death Proof. Only at the Grindhouse.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
No, it's Max, Darrow, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
Folks, it's the Grindhouse, not to be confused with Maxwell House. Welcome to yet another edition of the Grindhouse, as featured by Afro Radio. This is the Comic Shop. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Of course, folks, we have our own Enterprise crew featuring Darrow B and, of course, Captain Kirk. Let's go to a quick groove. We have a lot to get into, a lot to wax on, a lot to unpack. We're going to talk about Pacific Rim. We've got to see this film, but I'm hearing stuff. We're hearing chatter that the film may not be tracking well. I don't believe it. I don't believe it. So we will discuss that among other pop cultural things. First up, quick nerdcore groove. This is monumental. The Last Emperor. We'll be back in a few moments. And again, let's groove.
Righteous, it's my career and conflict is just a job risk. No stopping it when I build rhymes like an Egyptian obelisk. Watch me get down to your province, town, or populace. And my life rhyme is prime, possess the matrix like Optimus. Now you'll get framed like a diploma in your spiritual coma. I'm a black more like Othello, but I will die for Desdemona, owner. Simon studied Mike walk on a stage of solid marble. These replies simply startled and yell Shazam like Captain Marvel, are you? Aware of the fact that I left mankind devastated, and they still look for the blueprints of the monuments that I've created. See the guard's lies, don't compare my hard drive to your floppy disk. Chicago to Gotham City, New York to Metropolis. From city streets to Athens, Greece, from the pyramids to the Acropolis. My final resting place will be a solid gold sarcophagus. But what I can understand is how these foolish humans use the mic to their advantage and get lost like the city of Atlantis. You're a long way from Kansas, and this is more than just black Rome. You gotta be fresh, yes, and never talk in a whack tone. Cause once I got you in my attack zone, you could click your heels 3 times like Dorothy and couldn't get back home. So drop the mic and save those whack rhymes for later. Cause my battles need more broken arrows than Christian Slater. May the force be with you. It's true, nothing in life is coincidental. The Emperor is monumental.
Monumental.
For mortal men who pretend they never knew.
Monumental.
These MCs thinking that they can do.
Monumental.
For the simple things in life that suit me. The dead ancestors that speak through me.
Monumental.
for mortal men who pretend they never knew me.
Monumental.
For these MCs thinking that they can do me.
Monumental.
For the simple things of life that suit me. The dead ancestors that...
All right, folks, time is of the essence. Again, that was Monumental, The Last Emperor, giving you the best of Nerdcore Groove, folks. This is the Comic Shop. Welcome again also to the Grindhouse. Call in number 646-915-9620. We got a lot of stuff to talk about, all things pop, pulp cultural. First up, the Captain. Captain Kirk, it's your time. Let's get to it.
All right, I got those Oblivion numbers, so when we're ready to get started, they're right here, so we can discuss.
Okay.
Interesting.
And of course, we have the incredible, amazing, indefatigable, I'm trying to think of all the comic book cover, you know, Amazing Spider-Man, Incredible Hulk. This is Daryl B.
The public service announcement to anybody or all of these kids that just got selected in the NBA draft, you're going to get that big contract. Don't do what Aaron Hernandez did. All right? You're going to get the money. Leave the thug stuff. Leave the wannabe gang stuff. All right? You got the golden ticket. You don't need any more street cred. Back to you.
Well,
NFL
well,
has
fair,
all the thugs. All the thugs.
Well, to be fair, it's alleged. It's alleged.
It is, but if it walks like a duck, and quacks like a duck, you know.
It's
far too duck. Many incidents that's been revealed. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a little crazy, Daryl. It's. I have no words. I don't know. You signed a $40 million contract the month previously, $8 million a year for 5 years. There really should be no problems. But
exactly.
Hey, you know. I don't get it.
All right.
I don't get it. All right. Let's get into it, folks. Again, this is the Comic Shop. First up, we have a lot to get into, Daryl. I want to open up to you. Let's talk about Pacific Rim briefly. Coming up July 12th, I'm extremely excited. Again, it's being helmed by the actor Idris Elba, and, of course, it's a Guillermo del Toro work. I'm excited about it, and I have to admit that I was cool about it at first, but when I kept on seeing trailer after trailer after trailer, I'm a believer now. I thought it might be, you know, somewhat confusing with the sour taste that the Transformers has given me, the last Transformers, but it looks to be not that. It's a kaiju mecha film, but I'm hearing that, you know, they're saying chatter, whatever that means. They're saying chatter, according to the comicbookmovie.com website, chatter is saying that it may not be tracking as well as they would like it to track, and that what is the other film? The film with Chris Rock, Grown Ups 2 is tracking at around $40 million for this weekend, which is probably respectable for a comedy, but they're saying that this may track less than that. So, what do you think's going on here? I mean, it looks like it's, you know, it looks exciting to me. Why wouldn't it track that well?
Well, I said it before with After Earth, when that didn't do well or as well as they thought, I wondered what the repercussions would be on Pacific Rim, since it's practically the same movie house, you know, they're going after the same fans, you know, while one's more of a family thing, the other one's over the top. I will say this, all right? If people are deciding whether to go see this movie off of, like, previews instead of seeing the trailers. I mean, there's one thing I give Pacific Rim, all right? You either love the trailer or you really hate the trailer, all right? I don't know too many people that really hate the trailer. But if you see that trailer and you like the trailer and then you're like, oh, I don't know, it's not tracking well, I don't want to go see it. Why are you even watching sci-fi in the first place? Help me out here. You know, this is the type of movie we want. And we know with Guillermo del Toro, name the last movie Guillermo del Toro phoned in. I can't recall one where he went like, you know, I'm just in for the money. I don't care how this looks. I don't care about any of the movie continuity. I don't care about any of that. And I'll say this also. I have a friend that goes to the comic shop regularly, and I lent him my copy of the Pacific Rim graphic novel, the preview novel that came out, I want to say, 3 weeks ago. And he was on the fence about seeing it, because he's like, I don't know if it's going to be a trend. Because he's big into the Japanese monster Godzilla Rodan stuff. He thought this was kind of an affront to it. I gave him the novel, and I just went, here, read this graphic novel. It's from one of the scriptwriters. It has a variety of artists on it, like short channels. Stuff. Read it. If you read this novel and you don't see what Guillermo del Toro is planning to do with this, then there's no convincing you. He gave it back to me this week and goes like, Daryl, I got to go see this now. I got to go see this now. This is a couple of interesting concepts here. I just get sick and tired, and I've done many rants with you guys about people deciding, I trust this reviewer. Where you trust the reviewer instead of trusting your own gut. If you hate a concept, why are you going to see a movie? Because you're going to sit through the whole movie and you're going to be like, oh, I really don't like this concept. I really don't like this. Likewise, if you love a movie, you're going to let a reviewer get into you, just brainwash you? Folks out there, I often say, you guys have your own brains. You could tell by the trailer if you want to go and see the movie or not. All right? But you know what? Numbers speak louder than words. Cap, floor is yours, man.
Well, I would say, based on my own empirical evidence, that 40% of the audience has an indoctrinated thought process. So what they do is stamped upon by these people, these critics. I would say 40% of the audience. Oh, you know, I'm not going to go. Oh, I'm going to go because they said it was good. I got to see. So I would say 40%. That's just based on my own empirical evidence. But now let's talk about a movie that they said was not tracking well for a second. You see, the key to these things is the budgets. And I always say it's easier to take an educated guess, because that's what they're doing, with the United States market than it is with the overseas market. Now, remember what they tell you in Hollywood. They tell you in Hollywood 70 to 75% of their sales come from overseas. Let's look at Oblivion, which I thought was just an okay sci-fi movie. Okay. Tom Cruise, they say, doesn't do that good here in America, but he does very good overseas. So when the movie came out, it was like, it's not going to do that well. So let's look at the numbers. Production budget was $120 million. Domestically, it grossed $89 million. Foreign, $195 million. That's a lot of money. So it did 68%, actually 69% overseas of their money, and 31% over this way, 31.3. The exact numbers are 68.7. So that stays right in what they say, their numbers. But domestically, it really did not track that well, as you see. It did not track that well. But that was an okay side movie. The question here with this movie and what's happening here in Hollywood is the amount of money they're spending to do these movies. You're spending $150, you're spending $200 million. Even though your movie might be good, there's always a strong possibility, i.e. John Carter, there's always a strong possibility you might not make your money back. You might not make your money back. So I think a lot of times that these budgets are too big. $100 million should be right there. Okay, that's good. You'll make your money. Once you get into these realms where you're going $150, $200 million, anything can happen. You could fall on your behind, even if it's a good movie. So in my opinion, based on the trailers that I've seen leading up to now, the movie looks like it's going to be very good. Also, too, we have a very, very good director. I don't think he's great as of yet, but he's right on the cusp of being a great director. He's very, very good. Very, very good. So if I'm a betting man, I would say this is going to be a legitimate movie. It's going to be a legitimate movie. I would think it would be better than Oblivion, in my opinion. Back over to you, Sir Raffle Nerd.
You know something, with what you just said, and we have callers. Callers, hold on for a moment. We're still chopping it up about, again, folks, this is the Comic Shop, Grindhouse Saturdays. We're talking about Pacific Rim. I'm excited about the film. But as you were talking, Kathy, you made me realize something. You made me change my mind in mid-thought. Because when you talked about Guillermo del Toro's directorial prowess, I'm a fan of Guillermo, especially ever since Blade 2, and more importantly with his Hellboy stuff. But I almost didn't agree with you until you said, because you said he was kind of on the cusp of being someone great. And I think I didn't agree with you at first, but then I thought about it. And I said, you're onto something, because the movie business is almost like the record business in a way. Sometimes, well, not many times, when it goes by the director, a high-profile director, the director will supersede the actor on occasion as to how you approach a film. Like, Nolan is such an auteur now. Nolan and Tarantino, folks will go out and see they don't care who's in the film. It's better. It's icing on top if you have a high-profile actor, an actor you really like, that stars in these films. But, you know, even if it's a Woody Allen film, you know, Woody Allen tracks in certain ways, a certain type of you accept it because it's not even really about box office with him. It's about critical cachet. But Guillermo may not be at that point yet, but he's close.
Yep.
And I'm hoping people will see a film like Pacific Rim because Guillermo del Toro, he's doing it. Snyder is kind of sort of, you know, some of these guys are kind of, but they're not quite
Snyder.
There. No. You know, Snyder's not quite. You know,
I'm out of any of that talk right there.
I thought that the look of Watchmen was so spectacular. You know, he knows how to make, but that one was so glossy and so crappy that he lost it. But Nolan has been consistent where people will say, we're going to see a Nolan movie. Tarantino, his look, you know what you're going into. Spike Lee used to have that until he went to crap.
Ridley
but, you know,
Scott,
people
okay.
go, yeah, certain people, you know, the money's almost guaranteed because people like what he's going to come out with. Guillermo del Toro has a creative eye. He's got a creative eye, but hopefully this movie, if it does well, might bring him over the hump. Because he's a geek. He is a real geek. The fact that he wants to do a Justice League Dark intrigues me. And it seems like he's the perfect guy for that because he likes to do the kind of supernatural occult type of genre. And the fact that it's Justice League or Justice League Dark with all these supernatural characters, you know, hopefully he'll get that movie. He'll get his wish, but Pacific Rim has to win, man. It has to win.
Well,
so I'm hoping it does well.
I will say this. We can judge it. I'm interested to see how Japan and the Far East looks at it. Because remember, kaiju is their concept. It's their baby. All right? Let's see how they like the adaptation. Because, you know, they're better judges on it than we could look at it, but they live it. You know, remember, all of this was came right off the dropping of the two nuclear bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. You know, this is part of their way of a torturous recovery. Those movies to try to make fun of the violence, to try to help everybody get over. You know, the big monster, big robots destroying stuff, that's part of their recovery. I know this is a little deep for this show and everything like that. So they take movies like this to heart. You know, we'll see. If it goes over big there, then it really doesn't matter
what it does here. If it goes over Big Bear, it will still be playing in Japan and in China and in Korea for the next, like, 4 months, 5 months straight, and they'll make their money back.
We have callers. Let's go to a caller, and I'll just say one quick thing that also, listen, I'm going to support Idris Elba. I like the fact that Guillermo, I don't know if it has anything to do with the casting per se, but I like the fact that you have a brother helming the film. That's, we need to, you know, listen, anything, I'm all about image. You guys know about that. Anything that takes us away from being in a dress and clowning around, something in sci-fi, that's why I gave certain props, as everyone knows, certain props to Will Smith in his film, because I got to give half just on imagery. But this one, you know, Idris seems to be comfortable in multiple genres, very comfortable. So I hope it works out for him. And also Luther, the great UK detective series, I think is coming out, what, the end of this month almost, Al? It should be coming up real soon.
Mm-hmm.
The third season of Luther.
So, hey, like I said, he's definitely an actor that's not afraid to test his limits, just like the director. You put Idris Elba in anything, he gives it 100%. You put Guillermo del Toro into anything, he will give it 100%. Not like a Roland Emmerich, not like a Uwe Boll, not like, even though people spend, go to see their movies and give them money, you can tell when they're not into what they're doing. I mean, Idris Elba, Guillermo del Toro, hey, to me, this should be gold. We'll see.
Yeah,
like I said, public, it's your opinion.
FTW. All right, let's go to the phone, 703. Welcome to the Comic Shop. This is the Grindhouse. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from. What's up?
Hey, guys, what's going on? It's Bison George from D.C. How's everything?
Hey, George, what's up, man? What's going on?
Hey,
your thoughts?
Great, great. I definitely want to hear Daryl's take on the end of Age of Ultron and some other comic books late issues. But I'm going to switch over to the discussion on Pacific Rim. Is it me? It seems like this movie has been, you know, pending forever. It's like he can't wait for it to get here. And I think it's kind of gone through a couple of iterations. At first, it was sort of taken like as an homage, as a nod and a joke, you know, to the culture of the anime and, you know, films of before. But then it turned into like this serious sci-fi. So I don't know what to take of it. I'm looking forward to it, but I think with a lot of big sci-fi films underperforming, do you think maybe there's just some big-budget science fiction movie fatigue out here? And it may just underperform. People may say, oh, it's another big CGI extravaganza, you know, all effects, no plot. You think that might have something to do with, you know, some of the pre-chatter of the movie that's floating around out there?
Okay. Well, they have a two-part question here, so what I'm going to do. George, I'm going to put you on hold, and we're going to answer it. Because we're up on time. I want Daryl to take the Age of Ultron thing in a moment, and we'll answer the first part. We'll answer the first part about Pacific Rim. I think what you're saying is crucial. I think that the trailers and the expectation for this film has been lingering a bit. That we've been seeing trailer after trailer, the excitement's been building. Then it's kind of lulling. There's a lull somewhat. Like you said, it might, you know, there's also talk of it being somewhat connected to Battleship. Battleship has a major stink on that film. Major poo-poo on that film. And what happens is these films unfairly get connected to other films. So between The Last Transformers, although I believe it made money, I think people were kind of fatigued about that. That folks thought this was just another Transformers thing. Between the stink left over on Battleship, I think that's kind of playing a role in this. But for those who are doing the research, getting into the kaiju thing, looking at the trailers, I think we're seeing more reveals on it. Because I had kind of a like, I'm not so sure. But after seeing the trailers, especially looking at the other films, I think the trailer was when we saw Man of Steel, we saw trailers. I was convinced. So this might be a slow burn. it might be one of those films that has to kind of build its audience. But I think ultimately the fact that it is a kaiju film, kaiju mecha film, I think you might see more. You might just see more money come from overseas. Sometimes we're so ethnocentric in this country that we think that America is the end all be all when it comes to these kind of things. And the bottom line is, if it doesn't do well here, there's a lot of countries, man, with money. Money is still green in other countries. Last I checked, Daryl.
Well, let's put it this way. I'll answer the Pacific Rim question with one word: Godzilla. All right? You saw what happened when the Americans tried to make Godzilla Americanized. Yeah, the Asian market saw that for one day, and they left it alone. They went, America, screw y'all. You know, that essentially that with that travesty. Okay, it started as a parody, but then Guillermo del Toro went, no, it's going to be an homage, but we're going to make this serious, all right? So in that respect, George is right. When the first reports of this 2-3 years ago came out, they were like, oh, it's going to be a large parody, and del Toro went, no, my name is behind it. We're going to play this up. This is going to be serious. And like I said, I'll reiterate again. Anybody that wants more information about it, you know, more information on the backstory before this, you can see scans of Pacific Rim online, the graphic novel. You can see scans online where they have scenes of it. Just look it up. Read it. You get it much more into the backstories of the main pilots and Idris Elba. And you get a little bit on the kaiju, too. Now, Age of Ultron.
Hold on. That's what I want to do, because we're going up against the clock. And we have callers coming through also, Daryl. Let's go to a quick groove. After the groove, about 2 minutes, after the groove for 2 minutes, we'll talk about Age of Ultron, because we got to talk about that. We'll sneak that in. There's a lot of other stuff we got to get into. And then we'll also field some calls as well. So, folks, again, this is the Grindhouse, a.k.a. the Comic Shop, Saturdays. Let's go to a quick nerdcore groove. When we get back, we're going to hear Daryl unleash on Age of Ultron. So we got to hear about that. All right, this is Slept on Tony, MF Doom, Ghostface. We'll be right back. Let's groove.
Force me to do evil. I created an iron suit to protect my people. Escape. Vowed to be Iron Man the Great. The billionaire Tony Stark to renew your faith. Build Stark Towers, throw the biggest events. Got liquid armor, I can paint off this. Keep it few bad chicks. I ain't your average hero. Movie premieres. Hit me with this Zero Zero 66 and letting go. Playboy industrialist. Face of a ghost. Minds of a technologist. Specialist. Modern day speed slang therapist. Specializing weapons I can blow on terrorists. So shit, don't sleep, big homie. Real recognize and I can see you, phony. My weak heart can't take it. Got a lifelong sentence. Boy, genius grown up. And I fight with a vengeance. When I glide on stage, and my heart gently weeps in the iron rib cage, punched by metals, replaced by elements. My enemies hunted like a tusk on an elephant. Extraordinary, how did my dual identities? Anthony Stark, call me Tone, the top pedigree. Multi-billionaire, military contractor, crushing my opponents with the strength of a compactor, X Factor. I turn liquids to metals, water to wine. I turn dirt into rose petals. Greatest man walking, blow a bottle of goose. Go from clad iron armor to Versace suits. I'm so elegant. Scientifically intelligent, my lawyers won the case. I won't take the settlement. Money's irrelevant. I need heat to energize. We're taking over the planet. Stark Enterprise.
Once again, Tony Stark's is a governess, who robbed the planet and the
Okay, folks, we're back. Once again, that was Slept On Tony by MF Doom, Ghostface Killer. Call in number 646-915-9620. When we left, when we took the break, our friend George from D.C. was asking Daryl. I'm going to let him go on this because we got more talk to talk about, but I'm going to let him have the definitive opinion on this because I suspect I will agree with him. Daryl, give us your impressions of this latest cross event with Age of Ultron, the 10th and final issue wrapped up, I believe, last week. So what are your thoughts on Age of Ultron?
All right, I'm not a hypocrite, all right? There's one thing you guys know. I'll admit when I'm wrong. I'll tell you when I'm right, you know. But either way, it's coming at you 100%, okay? One of the things I have written Brian Michael Bendis on his Avengers run, is how he neglects history, for one, and two, he neglects what other writers do with the characters he takes. Like, oh, those stories never happened, let's do this, okay? That was the problem with Age of Ultron from the beginning. I keep on telling people this, right? He neglects what Busick did with the character. He regrets what DNA, Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning did with the character with the Annihilation Conquest series. He totally neglects it. So Ultron's motivation here is just, I'm just like, okay, so this is his motivation. He kind of grew out of this. And I'm trying to be vague here, people. I'm just trying to be vague, because if you want us to go read it, go ahead and read it. But I will say this. He does set up a couple of interesting points that can be followed in the future, with mainly the Angela, the Neil Gaiman character Angela coming over to the Marvel U, all right? And the Galactus' motivations now, and the very special guest characters that came in at the end. Let's see what he does with that. I just get tired, and if I rip DC on it, I'm going to rip Marvel on it too. Yes, Earth is important, but must every event in Earth freaking shake up the whole multiverse? Every event? I mean, this is Ultron, all right? If he chooses to forget history, then Ultron's creation or alteration shouldn't shake up the foundations of the multiverse. I mean, come on. Come on, seriously? You know, and by changing Ultron's history the way he did, i.e. Hank Pym's history, he affects all these stories that we've read for the past 25 years. Now you look back at it like, Bendis is totally messed with my head revolving these stories. You know, you have to look at it in a different light. So the best way to take Age of Ultron is, I don't have it in continuity. I just cut it out. Look at Age of Ultron, that is right there, that's out of the way. I look at it like how DC did Invasion. I cut that totally out. I look at it how DC did Final Crisis. I cut that totally out. I even did the same thing with Secret Invasion. Cut that totally out of continuity. Because if you try to read it in continuity, it messes you up.
There you go. One quick thing, Daryl. One quick thing before I answer these calls. Again, just another minute or so, folks. I used to think, don't you think, and this, I'm going to get some information to the audience, you know, we're talking about Age of Ultron, this particular cross event from Marvel, but in recent months, within the last year, we just came off of the DC major overhaul with the DC 52, which we're in now, and it's part of why you see a different Man of Steel, a different Superman, even in his costume. That costume is pretty much the same costume that we see in print. So we're seeing, ramifications of this overhaul. Do you think Age of Ultron is a sly way for Marvel to do their bit of a reworking, their characters, because we know that their rivalry is legendary, and they're known for doing this type of crap. So because DC has their overhaul, and they call it DC 52, is this a subversive way on Marvel's part to do their version of an overhaul?
Okay, Cap is going to love this answer. Wasn't that what Siege was supposed to be? Wrong. Wasn't that what Dark Reign was supposed to be? Hold on. Wasn't that what Avengers versus X-Men with Phoenix was supposed to be? Hold it. Civil War? Does anybody of these guys think that God can take? Pick a direction.
But is it,
go with it. You know,
is this more of a time story, though? I mean, you know, the fact that DC dealt with dimensions and time, DC 52, doesn't this also, I mean, now you have the AI coming up now. They have a whole new series called Marvel AI. Isn't that indicative of a type of overhaul?
It may be another soft reboot. But the problem is, how many of these changes in direction are you going to actually force your loyal customers to do? Like I said, Cap, I'm not a hypocrite. DC did it. I ripped the heck out of them. I'm ripping the heck out of Marvel here, too. The only interesting thing out of this for me is going to be the ramifications on another universe that we have talked very seriously about as they face a cosmic power different than the one they faced prior, okay? Because longtime fans know they've already faced an iteration of this cosmic force, you know? And how characters like Miles Morales is going to deal with the big purple guy.
All right.
Interesting.
Let's go to the phones. Also, folks, again, at 7 o'clock, we're coming up. We're going to go next door, of course, for Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk, where we will talk about the Trayvon Martin trial and his friend, Rachel Gentel, or Jean Tell. I think she's a patient descent. So, yeah, well, we'll talk about it. It's going to be a hot one, folks. Okay, the lines are open. 626. Welcome to the Comic Shop. This is the Grindhouse. Tell us who you are and where you are calling from. What are your thoughts? What's up?
Hey, what's going on? This is Covina Man from Los Angeles area. Hey, what's going on? I was going to go back to that Pacific Rim. I probably, you know, would want to see it, but I'm thinking it might be something that's targeted for a generation that's probably getting close to 50, because I'm looking at, you know, the theme of the movie reminds me of, like, Gigantor or Voyage into Space with Johnny Sacco and his flying robot, or you know, a couple of years later, maybe, like, Mazinga and Ray Dean, and probably a generation that goes to movies now, watch TV, have no idea what that was, you know, any of those things that I just said. But that was, like, the themes of like, Japanese animation and Japanese imported shows when I was a kid, and I'm closing in on 50. So, you know, the idea of, you know, build a robot to fight the enemies, you know, that's not today's generation. Today's generation is doing this whole, you know, Dungeons and Dragons type things, or trading cards about some little toys, things fighting each other. That's the generation that we're living in now. You know, reading some book about witches and warlocks or something. That's the generation now. And it seems like that movie is targeting a generation. Like I said, we're getting in that. We're getting close to 50, and that's what we grew up on. You know, I would compare it to like Gerald had mentioned Godzilla. I would mention Speed Racer, and how they took Speed Racer. That was like from my generation. And they try to make it now, and it's totally ridiculous. It just doesn't relate. And I would just say the Pacific Rim might end up the same fate as the Speed Racer.
Well, Kavita, man, go ahead.
Yeah, one quick thing, Kavita, it's a great question. You know, and you mentioned Speed Racer, and I have to admit, boy, did I want that movie to do well. And the fact that it had the fact that you had the Wachowskis involved in that, one would think Wachowskis plus Speed Racer should have worked. But it was so weird. You know, the only reason why I disagree with, I agree with the premise of what you're saying, but I think whether we like it or not, Hollywood is bereft of ideas. They're going to repackage this stuff to the end of time. So there's things that these younger folk may not be aware of. They'll ask questions about it. But as long as they repackage it for the new audience, I mean, what is original? Nothing is original. Everything is based on something. Look how much they love Quentin Tarantino. Some folks, I would never say that. Some people were super analytical about Tarantino. Some have said, whispered it, that he's a hack. They whisper it because they think that he does a pastiche of all these tropes that we've seen before. I think he does it masterfully. But his stuff goes back to, you know, it's everything. It includes stuff from the 50s, from the 60s, and from 70s exploitation, from Japanese, from Kurosawa. I mean, you know, he's a film student's dream. You know, but some may look at that and say, well, he's a hack because, you know, but the kids like it even though they don't know what they're doing. They have, if they're intelligent enough, they'll do the research. But the bottom line is, you will be correct, but Hollywood is going to repackage it regardless of what we say. Daryl?
You brought up research. I'll just tell you. Kavita, man, I've gone crazy this past week, right, because I'm getting something I love. I'm finally getting the Gotcha Man live-action movie, all right? So as soon as I saw the trailer, I sent the link out. I'm like, oh, I'm going crazy. I'm finally getting Gotcha Man Battle of the Planets. So if you look on the YouTube channel and you watch the trailer and stuff, I'm like, oh, that's the Phoenix. Oh, this is so cool, da da da. But the first comment I read is, well, why are these guys ripping off Power Rangers?
There you go.
You know,
Power Rangers. Power Rangers ripped off Go Rangers from Japanese. That was the original, right?
Exactly. And I'm just like, I wanted to reach into the screen and just choke the kid out. Like, you make this comment, do your research. You know, look up what Night Flight was. Look up some of the Go Ranger. Look up some of this stuff before you make a comment like that. But you know,
the Thunderbolts. Go ahead.
Yeah. Like, everybody has to be the first to make a comment. Everybody has to be the first to make an opinion. Now the question is, does Del Toro craft this movie to assuage those short attention span people? Or does he make this movie with a lot of flash and bang to captivate those people but give us a deeper story? And like I said, from reading the graphic novel Pacific Rim, you know what? I think he's casting a deeper story here. Time will tell. Back to you, Afternoon.
Well, you know something else? I want the captain to weigh in on this as well, because he's very good at when it comes to social sciences, and this is what you're talking about. Social science mixed in with culture, and unfortunately, a lot of these young folk, and I'm saying, let's put it this way, you have to make a distinction between the nerd. Did I make this analogy last week, Daryl, when I talked about the Tea Party being the geeks, and then everybody else? But when I go to let's say the Afropunk Festival, which is going to be coming up probably in August. And when I go, hopefully if I get tickets, go to New York Comic Con, I'm around my people. I'm very comfortable. And the bottom line is you have 15-year-old geeks who, because they probably suffer from some form of Asperger's, I say that jokingly, but not jokingly, they do this research. These guys know. I have to sometimes talk to people half my age because they have an encyclopedic knowledge. They want to know the history. And then there's everybody else. Everybody else are dum-dums. So sometimes, you know, someone like Guillermo del Toro, he is such a geek. You listen to this guy's interviews, he loves this stuff. He loves the Comic-Con. And he really is making this stuff out of love for the Tea Party, for the geeks specifically. The geeks will understand this history. They just do. They're not afraid to look at it. Listen, I'm looking at films from the 20s, for Christ's sake. I'm so anal about some of this stuff that a silent film that I've referenced before, what's the name of it? Daryl, you know this. The character that was based on the Joker from the silent film. What's the guy's name? It's a very interesting, but it's stuff that I'll do that probably a regular person would not do. The fact that the Joker, that is Batman's villain, didn't just come out of thin air. It was based on an actual horror film from the 1920s, the silent films. And we, what's the guy's name? I can't recollect the actor's name. But if you actually, once I look it up in a minute, you look at the picture of this 1920s character. He looks exactly like Joker, and that's the type of stuff I love. But it's 100 years ago. I'm going to look up stuff like this. But the Tea Party, the geeks are going to look this up. Everybody else are not. So we have to deal with balancing the core audience and the dum-dums. If the dum-dums get it, great. If they don't, whatever. Captain?
Your question was, you said you had a specific, I thought you had a specific question.
No, well, he was at, no, we were asking, he's talking about how this stuff translates, being that they're going back into the 50s, people who are older will get a kaiju. And this is like Mothra and Mechagodzilla.
Okay.
I mean, people understand that.
Okay, I see that, exactly where you're going.
So much time has passed that Generation Y doesn't know who the hell Mechagodzilla was.
That's true. Well, here's the reality of the situation. When you're dealing with this here, again, you're dealing with Guillermo. When you're dealing with Guillermo, as I said before, he doesn't give you a piece of fecal matter. He does not have piece. And even great directors, a lot of times they have fecal matter on their resume. You look down, when you go to IMDb, it's like, oh, he did that? Oh, that movie was terrible. Guillermo does not have that. So just based on that, this product here, I would say is going to be a legit product coming to the table. Now, of course, as you said before, the geeks will do the research. The geeks will get it. Regardless of whatever, which way the movie turns, they will get it. They will overanalyze it. They will do all of that. They will sit back and put a microscope to it. Now, the question is, does the pop culture, because then you have the geeks and then you have the pop culture. And sometimes the geeks slide into the pop culture every now and then. Sometimes. But for most part, the geeks look at the pop culture like, eh. Someone say, Daryl, by the way. You know?
Thank you.
They look at the pop culture like, get out of here. This is us here. You understand? But now it's whether or not. And when you're dealing at the theatrical release, unfortunately, the pop culture has to get it. They have to get it. In order for it to generate money. Now, also, too, the one good thing now, here's the other side of that. A lot of those pop individuals, they want to be geek. They want to be nerd to a certain extent. And the internet allows them to do that to a certain extent. The internet is the Cliff Notes. As I said before, AfroNerd did all the reading. The Callers did all the reading of all the books over the years. Daryl has done all the reading over the years. You understand? People, certain individuals that call in here have done the reading all over the years. But a lot of the pop culture, due to the internet, they can get the Cliff Notes. So they can also slide into the geek territory for a little while and then slide on back. But in order for this movie to really do well, the pop culture has to get it. It has to get it. It's two different cultures. Just as you said, Tea Party. Tea Party versus pop culture. The geeks versus the pop culture. So that's what it is. That's what we have here.
We really got to find another analogy other than Tea Party. I swear to.
Well, listen, you know what? But I know what you're saying, Daryl.
He's right, though, Daryl.
We really got to get another analogy. Really.
He's right, though. AfroNerd is right with that. When you walk in the comic shop, you go, you can exhale. You can let your hair down. When you're out somewhere else, you're like, oh, man, you're talking about something. Someone
someone thinks, you know, Ultron, Brainiac, they put him in the same universe. Come on, man. Studio, you know what I'm saying? That's what you got to deal with.
One quick thing, and listen, let's face it, the Tea Party, we know how they act, or at least the stereotype. They're very rabid, ultra. And geeks who grew up and love this culture and hold it tight, I am one of the chief offenders. I know you certainly are a chief offender. When some things do not go right, we take it personally, like a Tea Party person would. So this, I have to make that analogy because of the psychosis. When stuff doesn't go down right, we are ready to go 8F. I'm editing myself, but we're ready to go crazy. Real quick, when I mentioned about the Joker, because that's my illness, I can't look at something and just accept the Joker as a character. I'm going to say, well, wow, how did somebody come up with the Joker? So when I mentioned that he was based on an old-time silent movie, I just put this out there just for the audience, just for their own, if they want to do the research. The Joker as a character stems from a silent movie that I actually have in my possession, The Man Who Laughs. The Man Who Laughs came out in 1928, and the actor is Conrad Veidt. So if you ever go to Wikipedia or just go to Google, look up The Man Who Laughs, look up Conrad Veidt, and you'll see, whoa, this guy looks exactly like the Joker. That type of stuff, when I see the history, the lineage, I find it fascinating. And also, if you think about it, when we see these DVDs and these Blu-rays, I'm going to segue into Enter the Dragon for a moment. The fifth or sixth iteration of Enter the Dragon, another heist by Hollywood, but I might end up buying it. The reason why you want to buy this stuff because they give you so much history. It's like at one time people thought you just wanted to see the movie. Now people do want to know, how did you come up with these ideas? People seem to be more interested as time goes on as to the behind-the-scenes machinations as to how people arrive at these ideas. People do seem to get entertained by the creative process. I get off on something in some way when I find out that the Joker, you know, dates back 100 years almost now. I just like that kind of, and I think maybe the public is starting to become more geekish, I guess, because why all this extra stuff? Why are we going to get this new version of the Enter the Dragon on Blu-ray? But allegedly it's going to be a whole crap load of behind-the-scenes historical archival footage. So there's something there, I think. Now, segue point real quick, since I mentioned Enter the Dragon. I happened to check out Spinoff Online, folks. Again, Spinoff Online. And they were talking about, it was an interview with the producers and directors of the Enter the Dragon film, the Bruce Lee epic film, which is now and has been, it's a classic. And actually, I think a historically preserved, historically significant film. And we're talking about 40 years, amazingly so, 40 years. Now, these guys, which is so sad, these guys are like 10 years older than Bruce Lee. They're still around. So it goes to show you how young Bruce Lee was. I think he was 33 when he died, to this day, mysterious circumstances. But I would implore our listenership to check out this Spinoff Online article because it's going in with not only the interview with the producers, but all this stuff that comes out of the film. The fact that Jackie Chan and Sammy Hung, that these guys who were legends in their own right, they were under Bruce Lee's tutelage during the filming of Enter the Dragon. And I love this film, and I hate to say it, I'm probably one of those. There's some films that I will buy over and over again. Very few. This one, I already have it on Blu-ray, but I might have to get it again because it's too much crap historically connected to this thing that they're going to be letting us, that they're going to uncover. I don't know. Darren, what are your thoughts about this 40th anniversary Blu-ray? Should I get this? Is it going to be a waste of money or what?
I got to see what the special features are and the thing like that. I will say this, all right? If they include in it the documentary that Samuel Jackson narrated on the history of Kung Fu fighting and how it relates to how it's passed down, its beginnings and all of that, if they include a link to that and all of that, I will pick this up. Because, folks, he goes through everything, all the major kung fu, that you learn about the opera houses, you learn about the major things like that where Bruce Lee originated from and took the art form from and changed the art form. Oh, how? You brought up Sammy Hung, you brought up Jackie Chan. I know that the arguments still rage. Oh, who's the best? But if you ask Jackie and you ask Sammy, they'll tell you right out, we do amazing stuff on screen. We've directed amazing stuff. There's never been a natural talent like Bruce Lee that fit behind in front of the camera so easily. Now, you may say for martial art prowess, Jet Li is right there with him. But what that thing is, he was such a natural. And Enter the Dragon, I could contend Enter the Dragon was the first superhero movie. Because that's essentially how it was played. You had your protagonist, you had your villains, you had the damsel sort of in distress, you had femme fatales, you had the martial arts tournament, you had varying characters, you had an overarching plot, you had each of the characters having a subplot, you had a kind of a twist at the end. You know, it was a great superhero-type movie that wasn't a superhero movie, if you catch my drift. How many people have tried to emulate this and failed? Mortal Kombat. Yeah, how many people have tried to emulate this and failed? Back to you.
Yeah, we got about 3 minutes remaining. 2 minutes, actually. We're going to have to close shop and go next door for Afternoon Radio, where we're going to talk about the Trayvon Martin, Martin trial, among other things. But I will say quickly, you know, just looking at this article, when they're interviewing these cats, and they are older, so you do want to enjoy while they're still walking around, because these guys are the historical archivists. So this film is not just a karate film. I mean, it's one thing, or I should say, a kung fu film. It's not just that. You know, it went beyond that. It was actually, I think the Library of Congress has this preserved because it is historically significant. It's a film that has to be preserved, not unlike Citizen Kane. And it reminds you that Bruce Lee really held the genre up by himself, like Atlas held up the world. I mean, listen, we've seen the Shaw brothers, and they are to be commended. There's been a lot of Asian cinema in the martial arts field that's significant, but Bruce Lee really... And this film was also unique in the sense that it was a American and Chinese collaboration. So that makes it unique within itself. I also learned that Terry and the Pirates inspired this film. Now, who's Terry and the Pirates? Terry and the Pirates was a comic strip very similar to
Prince Valiant.
You know this.
Very similar
Prince
to Prince Valiant. And Tarzan.
Johnny Quest, they mentioned that too. They mentioned Johnny Quest also has a connection with Terry and the Pirates. But the fact that they also mentioned comic book inspired, it's when they start getting into the bones of Enter the Dragon, like you said, superhero, it was very much a comic book film. And the guy said it was really meant to be that way. All right, you know what? We're going to probably do a separate discussion. Once the re-release comes out, we'll probably go into it deeper. Gentlemen, a pleasure. Coming up on After Nerd featuring Captain Kirk in a few moments. Let's groove. Daryl, as always.
Enjoy,
George,
folks.
Again, hold on.
The man, awesome.
After Nerd coming up next.
Spot for the beard?
I think not.
We'll be right back.
thing that black people need to tell the truth about.
What?
One, Rodney King should have got his head beat for driving drunk and being grown in a Hyundai. OJ did it. Rosa Parks ain't did nothing but sit her black tail down.
Hey, I'm going to back you up on that, because, see, look, he was on the bus back in the day, and he on the bus now.
Eddie, not only is what you're saying not true, it's wrong and disrespectful for you to discuss Rosa Parks in that way.
Exactly.
Wait. Hold on here. Is this a barbershop? Is this a barbershop?
It's
a barbershop. Yeah. I mean, we can't talk straight in the barbershop. Then where can we talk straight? We can't talk straight nowhere else. You know, this ain't nothing but healthy conversation. That's all right.
You
got
to tear the pop
down. Ain't nobody exempt in the barbershop. You know that. Ain't nobody exempt. You can talk about whoever and whatever, whenever you want to in the barbershop.
Why you got
to
tear the pop down like this, Eddie? You know you're wrong. Keep on walking. You're wrong. You're walking by yourself this time, pal. I ain't with you. I'll tell you one thing. You better never let Jesse Jackson hear you talking about that.
Man, just a joke. No.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man. What is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funk and lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a locker.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Deepak, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Good evening, folks. The fire continues to burn. This is Afro Radio. Listen, we had the comic shot with Daryl B., myself, and, of course, the indefatigable Captain Kirk. So the groove, the fire continues. We're going to talk about the Trayvon Martin trial, among other things. Lolo Jones, Olympian, in trouble. I got her back, though. I got your back, sis. I got your back. I'm just putting it out there. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Folks, going to be a one for the record books, Afro Nerd Unchained again. I'm going to go off. I suspect the captain will be in tow as well. First up, quick groove, something I played the last time, because I really love this groove. It was the last time I opened up the program, so I'm going to do it again. This is the lovely Janelle Monae, who knows how to keep her clothes on. Although, if you check out the Queen video, this is the video with Erykah Badu. She's got a lovely figure. Oh, boy. She's been hiding it, respectfully. Anyway, once again, Janelle Monae, Tightrope Remix by Oliver Nelson. You know what to do. Let's groove. Be right back.
You get to take out just, and when you give it on the scene, yeah, they talking about it, cause they can't keep on the scene.
Corvette, classy bird.
Again, folks, you're not ready. I'm going to play it anyway. Again, the lovely Janelle Monae, Tightrope Remix by Oliver Nelson. Folks, this is Afternet Radio featuring Captain Kirk. The call-in number, 646-915-9620. Captain, let's get into it. The fire is burning, boy. Let's get into it. What's up?
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Now listen, Sir Raffle Nerd, let's get into that, Rob Redding, and how people are coming around to the theology of Afro-nerdism. Let's get into that.
Okay. Your wish is my command, sir. Listen, quickly, just a quick backdrop on that. I have no problems with being self-deprecating. I can make fun of myself. You know, listen, I don't even really mind being hated, which is weird. You know, some folks are concerned about what people think about them. If someone, you know, really gets angry and starts shouting and blah, 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 blah. To me, it's like if I take out the cross on a vampire and he starts hissing. So we take out the cross on many folk, Captain, and they start hissing. So I know what's going on. When we give you hot fire, hot truth, and you start to hiss and spit and vomit, I know what I'm dealing with. So I kind of get off on it, Captain. So anyway, on Rob Redding's show, and he is a commenter. He is a radio personality to be respected. However, when I was on his show maybe 2 months ago as a caller, I gave him some Afro-nerdism. And he gave me, you know, he has a shtick with the whipping thing. So he whipped me into oblivion. Very funny. I believe I played it. We have enough time, but I've played the clip before. But then Mr. Redding met Ms. Rachel Jontel. Now, I mentioned the term lower tier, and he said, you know, yuck, 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 yuck. What's the lower tier? What is it? Look at this guy. What lower tier? What the hell are you talking about? Then, a few days ago, he described and was perturbed and confused about this young Ms. Rachel Jontel. He didn't understand. He didn't understand her vernacular. No one understood her vernacular, probably, but she came across with a lot of ghetto-centric mannerisms to the chagrin of the prosecution. This is their star witness. Captain, this is their star witness, and she brought the street to the courtroom, and that is not allowed. And it looks like this case might be blown because the star witness is not credible, ladies and gentlemen. So when he went in and was confused about what he saw, I had to give him a visit. Had to pay him a little visit. So, folks, without further ado, and then we'll go into the calls, this is Afro-Nerd, round two, Rob Redding, a few days ago. Hold on.
A lot of things. And I'm not saying that she lacks these things, but maybe there's something that we can do to polish our young people up a little bit, to make sure that they're actually articulating sentences the way they're supposed to be, because this is not attractive. You know, and some people call it, again, talking white. I call it proper English. You know, it's just a matter of being able to understand you and to speak up. Why are you talking like you're talking to the ground like this? Why are you talking like this? What's with this? Why are you talking? I feel like I can't articulate my sense. What the hell is this about? What is it about? Afro Nerd in New York, how are you, sir?
Okay, Rob. Listen, you gave me a bit of a tongue lashing last time I called up, and that's okay. I'm a pretty thick-skinned kind of guy.
But, yeah, I'm with you for like about 2 or 3 minutes.
again? I'm sorry, I didn't hear that part.
Yeah, I whipped you for like 2 or 3 minutes.
Well, hey, you know what? You're allowed to do that. I'm not going to disrespect you or your show. But I'm, as you can tell, I'm very comfortable with my positioning, and I don't think my position can really be deconstructed. And actually, I feel a little bit sad in some ways because, you know, some of the things that I said last time, using the term lower tier, and you kind of did the yuck yuck on me with your compatriot. You said, yuck yuck yuck. What's the lower tier? What is that? Well, this is what this young lady represents. She represents the lower tier. I chose to use a kind of word, a kind of euphemism, than using the term hood rat. But it's the same thing. And God bless her. But I have to tell you, honestly, Rob, in listening to her speak, it was very disheartening. And we lose out collectively as a community when it's really serious like this. We lose out because we're not credible.
Hold on a second. You know, Afro Nerd, let me stop you for a second. You didn't just say that people were lower tier, but you said that the people that are lower tier were expendable. That's what you said. And that's why I whipped you.
I can go into it for a second if you want. If you're allowed, I can explain it. But I don't think it can be constructive. So if you allow me, I can explain what I meant.
Well, let's do that, because I want to talk about that, and then we can talk about this young lady, because I think we agree about this young lady. Go ahead.
Okay. Last time I used the term, I said something about the community, especially in Chicago, that the intra-racial violence is so extreme that it's like Beirut. They're using terms like it's 70s Beirut. And just like in 70s Beirut, you might have to use drones. You might have to use military intervention. Now, that's not to say all black folk. But if we don't look at the Crips or the Bloods as enemy combatants, then they might have to be looked at that way. I don't want to see black babies dying and the elderly dying. I don't want them to happen. But they're already collateral damage, Rob.
See, that's the thing. I don't want to write people off. It's just not my nature, and that's why I whipped. That's why, but
happening.
I don't do that. I know it might be happening, but I don't do that. I don't write people off.
I haven't seen black men coming in in white horses and white hats to save these people, our people. It's not happening. I don't see Farrakhan in that area coming in his neighborhood. He's not coming in. So what I'm saying is to save lives that might have to be considered because they're dying by the hundreds in America. That's what I meant. I consider the Crips and the Bloods enemy combatants. I'm not saying black people. I'm saying the Crips and the Bloods. That's what I meant.
Well, Afro Nerd, I understand what you're saying, but I just think we disagree on the expendability of these folks as it relates to our community. I want to give you some more time because I know that I did zap some of your time on this because we've got a minute before the break here. A minute before. I want to make sure we talk about this young lady because I think Afro Nerd, you've got some important things that I want you to add on this conversation. I know we spent some time on your last call. But now that we've gotten that out of the way, we could talk exclusively about this young lady because I think you have some things that you want to add. Hold on. This is Reading News Review. I'm Rob Reading, America's independent voice, giving you the pressing news that you need to know at 855-ROB-38. Her community, I know there's a lot of pressure on her, and she's failing at every turn of it here. Afro Nerd, your thoughts were that she is part of the lower tier.
Yeah. Yeah, it's unfortunate, but it's a real thing. There's books on this, and a lower tier doesn't necessarily just ascribe the term to being black. Definitely, it's lower tier is a cross-racial thing. Heck, Zimmerman is lower tier, and that's how I think this thing really happened. This tragedy really happened. If you're going to look at it honestly and not in a politically correct way, Zimmerman did not wear a uniform. Who is Zimmerman? I'm just being logical here. If he wore some kind of uniform, some kind of hat, something saying clearly Neighborhood Watch, if he identified himself to Trayvon, and if Trayvon had the opportunity to react and say, hey, my father stays in this complex. I live up the block, or I'm staying up the block. This would have been over and done with. But because you're dealing with two sets of folks coming from a certain mindset, someone has to die. And that's what's happening with our youth. And I've used this tagline with you a number of occasions, Rob. Political correctness is killing our youth. It is. Because this young woman is his compatriot. Not only is she a witness, but she's also part of his cipher. So the jurors are going to look at this and say, wait a minute, this is who Trayvon hangs out with. This is a mess. I don't think people understand what this really means.
Especially in the eyes of that jury. I think you're right about that, because I thought about the same thing. You know, birds of a feather flock together. When you lie down with dogs, you get fleas. That's the way it is. And, you know, the people that are around you are the people who are indicative of who you are. You know, and again, I go back to the fact that this young lady deleted from Twitter a lot of provocative tweets with her doing drugs, her at parties, et cetera, you know, and talking about drugs, those kind of things. This is the kind of crowd he's running in. So, yeah, that's going to be a big part of it. And it's sobering, and it's not going to be one of those things that people want to hear, but those are the facts.
One more thing, Rob, I want to say. You know, when you said something very profound when you talked about this whole notion of, well, if she had better diction, we can't expect her to be a professor. I don't want to go that far into it. But you do have to have a certain level, a certain modicum of being able to speak the King's English. You just do, to be able to navigate for whatever reason. But the reality is that we're encouraging this in our culture. It's being encouraged. And what you said something before about this could be interpreted as her speaking white. Why would you want to speak white? You know what we're doing? We're giving white people too much credit. Only white folks can speak the King's English? So you have to start to invert these arguments. It sounds ridiculous.
Yeah, because that's the thing.
It's got to stop.
Yeah, I agree with you.
All right, folks. That's roughly it. We have callers as well. We're going to get to them in a moment. Captain, you know, he didn't know what lower tier is. Now I suspect lower tier is probably going to be a part of his lexicon now. See, I was with him last time because I was crazy. I was I'm that crazy guy from New York.
You nailed it.
So I want our listenership. Now, we're going to unpack this evening. We got about 40 minutes remaining, so we will open up the lines. We're trying to keep the music to a minimum because of time constraints, maybe one more jam towards the end. But there's a lot to get into. I was never confident or comfortable about this Trayvon Martin thing to begin with. And I'm going to be absolutely honest with you, and I'm going to say something that folks probably know how I feel. If you look at this on a metaphysical level, Captain, from an existential way, Trayvon might have been doomed because of his name. I'll go that deep into it, but I'm not going to go – I'll say that much. Folks know what I mean. When you look at the police blotter, you see Lakeisha, you see Trayvon, you see Jaquan, you see Jaheim. You're seeing some of these names that are indicative of your station in life, and I don't want to berate someone for their name so much, but it's a cultural component that's happening here that confuses matters, Captain. When we see the community, when we see the community come out in droves to get behind a big racial event, what confuses matters when it goes into the legal system, because we can talk about this almost on a personal level, Captain. Some of the high profile cases that come from New York that black folks lost, where the community was scratched their heads and what happened. When it gets to the bones of these cases, when it gets to the legal element, you know what they hear? You know what happens, what they don't want to hear? The witnesses were found not to be credible. No one ever wants to talk about that. With the Sean Bell case from a few years back, not too far from this locale where we are currently broadcasting from, not too far, minutes away, when the news reported that particular case, and it was a tragedy. Anytime young men and women are killed, especially men of color, when they're killed, it's not to be made fun of, it's not to be spoken about lightly. When they talk about these cases and it goes into the legal realm, what happens? I'm always hearing, Captain, the witnesses were not credible. They bring that street aesthetic. They're not speaking up. They're not looking in the eyes of these folks. They're intimidated by white folks. I wish I understood that, Captain. That's really what's sad, that some of us are so inferior. We feel inferior that you can't speak to someone because a white man's standing there. You don't feel his equal. And we saw that with Ms. Rachel Jontel. Now, she's a young woman, but I've also seen 12-year-olds. I've seen 10-year-olds speak up and say unequivocally what they saw. When you tell the truth, the story never changes. I can recite stories and have on this program that occurred 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago. When it's the truth, the story never changes. This young woman, her friend died. This is supposed to be her homeboy. Trayvon's parents held their heads in their hands, ladies and gentlemen, because this woman did not show improve. Any nervousness? I understand being nervous, but this is supposed to be a world stage trial. Now, the lower tier cyberspace community, the hip-hop community, has come out, Captain, and they're saying we're holding this girl down. This is true, ladies and gentlemen. We're hearing, go to allhiphop.com. If you can stand it, go to allhiphop.com. They have 5 reasons why the hip hop community should hold her down. They're saying she's beautiful. She kept it real. This is what they're saying, folks. She kept it real. All these accolades. And this girl kept it dishonest. She used different names. She lied on several occasions. She acted like she didn't want to be there. She wasn't looking folks in the eye. She was a turnoff to this jury. And the bottom line is, your friend died. You're supposed to represent. Captain, do you remember the hip hop slogan from 20 years ago? At the time, I didn't care for it. Years later, it did mean something. They used to say, "You got to represent, yo. You got to represent. Why aren't you representing?" Was a hip hop term. We don't hear it anymore. Now it's keeping it real, keeping it street. Keeping it real never translates into the corporate world. It doesn't translate into the legal world. Sorry, folks. Keeping it real means keeping it real dumb. Shouting out the great Dave Chappelle. All right, Captain, your thoughts, then we're going to go to the phones.
Well, I want to give the people a few prerequisites. A few prerequisites before I get into it. Now, I knew a lawyer, or should I say, he was a Columbia law professor. He taught Chinese law. And I also knew a public defendant that was actually angry because they weren't making the money that they thought they would be making as a lawyer. But anyway, they told me 2 things. Because of the neck, even though we're dealing with a witness, keep in mind, I know this is a witness, but some of the same rules still apply. Now, just listen to what I'm going to say. Follow me on this. Columbia law professor told me that a black person, because of the negative images that are put out there with black people, does not stand a chance in court. He told me that. The public defendant also told me that. Going in. Now, here's the next thing that we realize. How are decisions made? This is something I say on this show on a regular basis. Decisions are done in the limbic system of the brain. That means all decision making is emotionally based. How so, Captain? What are you talking about? What does this have to do with anything?
follow me. You remember Chad Ochocinco with the court case? What did the female judge do? She made an emotional decision. She made an emotional decision, meaning which she was already gunning for Chad Ochocinco. But you see, the problem with Chad Ochocinco, like a lot of black people, they do not know the rules of engagement. They do not know the rules of engagement, not sophisticated enough. And the lawyer did not prep Chad Ochocinco to play this perfect, because this female, now there's a reason why I'm saying female. I'm going to explain that too. Because this female judge was already gunning for him. Being that decision-making is emotionally based, women have a tendency, not all the time, to be more emotional than men. This is why they say, not all the time, but they do say men make better leaders, because the less emotional your decision-making is, the better your decision-making will be. Now, we bring this right back to this case. Now, we're dealing with a star witness. Now, somewhere along the lines there, you have to know the rules of engagement. Now, some things you cannot necessarily change, but you have time because you know when the case is going to take place. You can do some preparation, take off the roughness around the edges so you can perform better when you get on the stand. That was a failure to everybody around her, not just with her, but also everybody that was around her. You got to know, you have to know what you are dealing with. You have to know the rules of engagement. The opposing lawyer team, their job is to destroy the witness, make her not credible. That's how you win cases. It's not about right or wrong. It's about win or lose. And black people, you have to be more sophisticated. You have to understand the rules of engagement. Now, just as the great Afro Nerd said, he does not expect for the young woman to speak like a college professor. But you have certain baselines that you have to be able to hit in the English language. That's all we're asking. And there was time to prep her so she would be better, to get her more comfortable. That's what you do. That's what also, when you go to school, they give you public speaking. Remember those classes? Communication classes. All of these. You take these in high school, you take them at college level. All that is for a reason. Because in life, you will encounter these situations where you have to be able to put together a decent sentence. Now, I've also ran into people, not just to say, she's totally lower tier and everything else, she comes from an impoverished situation or whatever the case might be. You also run into people who come from the quote-unquote hood, not all the time, but sometimes, who have studied the rules of engagement, and when they get in situations, they speak properly. So it can be done. Back over to you, Sir Apple Nerd.
Yes, Captain. Right before we answer the phones, I want to mention one other thing as well. There's a whole thing about the mentioning of code switching. That's what the captain was inferencing. The ability to code switch is crucial. And again, this was allegedly a personal friend of hers. And it is troublesome to see a whole legion of support from folks who refuse to believe that this woman performed poorly. They're saying she showed the defense attorney a thing or two. She showed him. She's not there to show him anything. She's not there to be combative with him. She's there to ensure that the parents of Trayvon Martin get justice. Now, I already told you, I really have problems with the case to begin with. But I do feel that the case, that you shouldn't just be able to kill somebody without there being some kind of investigation. So I think that is correct. But
some things that were said about George Zimmerman, you know, Zimmerman is shaky, but in the early beginnings with him claiming injuries, folks, he wasn't really injured. That didn't really happen. We're seeing when the evidence comes out that he did sustain a broken nose and this, that, and the other, you don't want to believe it. You can't convict a person when the evidence is there. But this is the place is to decipher credibility. And this is the arena to decipher credibility. Who are you? Folks do not understand what the legal parameters are in this country. Love it or hate it, folks are not there to really bear witness. On occasion, you might be lucky to actually have footage. If there's no footage, the best you can do is balance. That's why you see a scale of justice. You have to balance credibility. Going in there with the street-ish, again, folks, going there with the street-ish, street bravado, it doesn't interpret well. We don't know what you're talking about. We don't know who are you. What are you? It's crazy. And the lower tier, as I said before, it comes off as if they are literally looking at things as if they're looking at a house, a fun house full of mirrors. Everything is distorted. Didn't the article say what's good is bad, what's bad is good? This is what this is now. She's secretly smart. And what we're doing here, whether it's myself, the captain, Dr. Cosby, Juan Williams, whatever, pseudo-conservatives, liberals with a conservative bent, what have you, what we're doing is I'm telling you, your zipper is down. You have a piece of toilet paper on your heel. You have something hanging from your nose. That's what we're telling the black community. We're trying to tell you, you know, you need to button it up so you can move forward. You can, now the lower tier is making it where you can't tell them, you can't give them corrective measures. And when you can't do that, you stay losing. Shout out to Lolo Jones. She said a joke, maybe it was a crass one, but she was talking about this girl's representation. She did not represent well. You can say what you want to say, you can't deconstruct it. Now I'm hearing Lolo's too light-skinned to have a comment. This is the backlash, folks. Woman of color, light-complected, still part of the community. She's too light-skinned. She's too privileged. I've heard people who are too bougie. Anybody from a certain background who is black, a person of color, these folks will not allow you to have an opinion. I am hearing this now, that if you speak too well, the educated, the light-complected, the privileged, whatever, all these factions of the black community, now we're being told we can't say anything.
Hold on, Seraph on Earth.
We can't.
Hold on. Wasn't there at one point people thought that you were actually a white guy?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. In the early beginnings, they wanted to shut this site down. I've mentioned the emails I received telling me your viewpoint would be dangerous to the black community. As if what Ms. Jontel, and again, she's only 19, so I can appreciate her youth, but don't pretend that what she's doing is a positive for the black community. When the community, and more importantly, when Trayvon Martin's parents are there, they're not looking for all that ghetto-centric prose. They're not looking for that. They're looking for you to tell your story so they can get some answers on what happened to their son. The streets are telling the parents, we don't care about that. She kept it real. All right. Okay, let's open the lines, folks. We got a few moments. We got less than 30 minutes. We got some time. Okay, we got 2 312s. I believe two folks from Chi-Town. Let's get into it. 312. What's up? Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk.
Who, me?
3124. That's you.
Yeah, Surge.
What's up, sir?
Okay. A couple of things. We're going to try to make this real fast.
Okay. All right.
I believe it or not, I don't blame the girl, Rachel Gentel. I blame the lawyers.
That's true.
If you're a lawyer, really, your prosecution or defense, you're always going to have witnesses who are not, they're not ready, right? And it's your job to prepare them. They did not prepare this woman at all. Even Gloria Allred on TV the other day said she would have taken at least a week just to prepare. If she had been a witness for her, she would have taken a week to have prepared her. You know, speak clearly, enunciate, don't cut the eyes, don't do none of that behavior. You know, don't wear, you know, I look at her haircut, I keep waiting for Larry and Curly to show up. Get something better. That's on the lawyers. You're never going to have, a lot of times lawyers don't have perfect witnesses. So it's the onus is on them to prepare them. She was not prepared, they let her loose, and that's what you got. People who are defending her, they're basically doing it because they're embarrassed. So they feel they got, and because she's a black woman and she's a dark-skinned, heavy-set black woman, of course they feel they have to defend her. Right, but basically they're doing it out of embarrassment because really they feel the same thing, but they don't want to admit it. But I really don't blame her. She is, as Paula Deen said, she is what she is. So it was really on the lawyers. And if it came to a point where she was not prepared, the lawyers were going to have a problem, maybe they just should not have put her on the stand. Came to that. And actually, there was a prosecution witness who was actually much, much more devastating. People will blame her if Zimmerman wins this case, which I think he will. But it's really not much her than another witness who they had that people tend to overlook. The other thing about Lolo Jones is, you know, what does Lolo Jones and Rachel Gentile have in common? Neither of them have won a gold medal in the Olympics. Lolo Jones is a third-rate. She's a third-rate athlete whose only gig or notice is the fact that she poses around nude a lot and claims she's a virgin. Right? She's a third-rate athlete, right? She has no cause to criticize anybody.
Listen. This girl did perform poorly, man. And I thought that, the joke might have been crass, but I she said what we all thought. I really didn't have a problem with what she did. So this girl might have blown the case, and you have all these people weighing in and congratulating her and big upping failure, which is the problem. We can't dismiss the fact that she
I'm not saying you reward the girl, but what I'm saying is that the prosecution, this is who they had. Tayvon Martin wasn't talking to a psychology graduate student. He was talking to this girl. Right? That's the luck of the draw. So therefore, any lawyer would know, okay, we got a problem with her. We're going to have to work on her so she presents herself well. I read one of the most stupidest defenses of her. Someone basically wrote a piece defending her in which the basic point was that, well, I was in a similar situation and I was intimidated by white people. Therefore, I understand where she's coming from when she's intimidated by white people. That's a dumb defense, right? Okay, I'm sure she was intimidated by white people. You know, she was in a situation she definitely was not in, she was not used to. So therefore, you can't rely on her to be brilliant. It's the lawyers who had to prep her. Even if it took a month, it's like My Fair Lady, you know, Henry Higgins and Eliza Doolittle. That's literally what it should have been. You know, A-E-I-O-U, the rain in Spain falls mainly on the plane. You got to prep her.
I'm going to call you Chow. Listen, Serge, I understand what you're talking about. My problem is with Lolo Jones, all these folks started weighing in on her complexion, and she's not, and she's privileged. They made the connection between her fair complexion and her being privileged, when really her backstory is she was living in the basement of her gym as a youth. I think of someone like Mariah Carey. I'm going to stick up for the light-skinned black folks now. Mariah Carey, who was local to this area that we're broadcasting in,
we're gonna claim that she was light skinned and privileged? Not the case. Her sister has AIDS. I know of her sister's former madam in Long Island. I've seen that woman. Not the way you think I've seen her, but I know of her. So what I'm saying is, we're insane when we see light skin on a black person and we automatically equate she's light skin and she's privileged. Hold on. Light skin, privileged, and skinny. So that means I can't critique you. I can't tell you that something's hanging from your nose. I can't tell you that something that your shirt tail is hanging out. Well, however it comes, black folks do not want to hear correction. When you saw Jesse Jackson telling the world, I think we should snip the testicles of your future president because he's talking down to black people. Every time you correct someone, it's talking down. And when you don't do that, this is what happens. A major murder trial that I looked at the case differently now, Serge. When I looked at this girl do what she did, it went from this high-profile case to traffic court. She brought it gully. She brought the whole thing down. This is a big trial. The world's watching. When she spoke, this is traffic court. Get this fool out of here. That's what she did. Keep it in street. Keep it real. You stay losing. I applaud Lolo Jones because she kept it real by saying, you know what? That's what Dia said.
I can't stand Lolo Jones. I cannot stand that heifer. I can't stand her.
I love her. And she can continue being naked.
I can't stand her.
I love her.
No, she ain't got nobody to be naked anyway. She's got nobody to be
naked.
Care.
Okay.
She's got nobody. No tits, got nothing.
I tweeted her. I said, Lolo, I got your back. I tweeted her,
no.
I got your back. Sir, let me go to the next call.
All right, go ahead. Hold on.
Okay, another Chicago win. 312.
Yeah, this is Kim Seth in Chicago. Can you hear me?
How's it going, Kim?
Yes.
It's going great. Y'all are doing good. Y'all are all over the page. I'm for some things. I'm against some things. But what I just want to say is, just like you just mentioned, which is the key to that, that nobody is recognizing, Lolo said that she's going to sell it like Madea goes to court. Madea is the standard.
Mm-hmm.
Madea is the standard. That's what everybody is watching. If you look at this girl, Rachel, and all these people that are, and I'm not defending her one way or the other because I didn't see her testimony, but Madea and acting stupid and acting foolish around white people or in court or in jail or with all the episodes that Tyler Perry has, Madea, she's not doing it on purpose, but Madea is supposed to be the reflection of the black community. So now can people see the detriment that Madea is putting on our society? Can they see it now? That's the standard.
Wow.
The standard is not law and order, which I watch religiously, and I don't ever see anybody in court acting like this, no matter where the criminals come from. They never act like people are saying she act. But Madea is a standard now. And Madea been to court, she's been to family reunion, she's been to all these different things. So if that's what people see, white people see it, the world sees it, everybody sees that's how black people act. So it's like, you know, maybe people that don't watch Madea, because I don't watch Madea, so I don't know. I only know the titles of these things. I refuse to watch. I don't watch any of Tyler Perry's movies or shows or anything. The Meet the Browns, all these things are, I mean, that's how we act. That's how we act. That's what's selling. That's what we're putting our money in. So, you know, I mean, how can we expect anything better?
Well, what's also disturbing, Kim, is that, again, as I mentioned before, we are seeing a whole legion of people, websites riding with this woman. We got your back, sister. I'm seeing tweets from rappers. I mean, not that they're anybody legitimate, but we're seeing tweets from rappers saying, we are holding you up, sis. We got your back, sis. Listen, the larger issue is, do you have Trayvon's back? Do you have his parents' back? These people are looking for. They're not looking to play games. This is too crucial of a case to play street games. And it shows you that the street doesn't give a damn about these people.
I know, but that's the way that people are living now. Everything has gone down to streets. And, you know, you want to talk about the rappers, and when rappers start off, everybody is like, I'm going to help the community. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. This girl is an example of exactly what happened in New Orleans when all the people came out of the woodworks and you saw all this poverty. This is an example of people coming out of woodwork that they're not getting the education. Not that the education is not available, the degree and the quality of the education of what these people are getting. They go into class, but what are they learning? They dropping out at 10th grade because, I mean, I'm in Chicago. You're in New York?
Yes.
Okay, that's what these kids are learning. Nobody's hiring them at jobs because they can't speak, but they go right to school. You see, when it's May and June, you see these crazy prom outfits that they wear. I don't even look at
it
because it's like, you know, and that's 8th grade graduation. That's not even 12th grade graduation. That's 8th grade graduation. And I'm originally from Louisiana. And when I start seeing, are you familiar with the pictures that they put out around prom time of 8th grade graduations of all the
foolery? I'm so familiar with it, Kim, that you have websites that are becoming very successful because they promote it or show it or exploit it. But, yeah, what gets me is why are the administrators allowing it? Why are they allowing, you know, gum wrappers and
people don't
you know.
The people don't know any better. And then nobody, the people that can do better are not helping them to know better. Like you said, they should have prepped this lady to let her know. I mean, she should have been the last witness and not the, you know, on the first few days because she wasn't ready. But what mindset did the people have to think that she would be okay coming on like that?
Well, I want to say one thing, and I always suspected this. I always suspected, Kim, that the fix was in. The fix was in. Zimmerman's father is a magistrate in Florida who has a lot of power, from my understanding. And he was never charged initially. He was never charged until it became political. Once it became politicized, this might be a big song and dance just to show people, okay, we're going to put on a trial, we're going to make it look a certain way, but at the end of the day, we're not going to convict this man. And when you have the star witness who kept it real to the street people, torpedo a case, it means it might have been a song and dance all along. I'm going to go to a quick clip from Jane Velez. Hold on.
You know what? I understand how people feel about this witness, but I'm going to defend her. She's 19 years old. She's been harassed and doxied on the internet. She's been called everything but a child of God by people who do not know her for the last year and a half. She's sat through depositions. She's been harassed. And, you know, I think that we have to remember that she's 19 years old and really just look at the context and the content of her testimony, which was totally consistent with every testimony that she's given.
Frank Caffey, a former neighbor of George Zimmerman and supporter of George Zimmerman.
I loved her. She's going to be the catalyst to setting George free. She's laying out a foundation for the defense. It's clearly that her testimony is contrived. You can see that she's being led. In essence, she reveals in her testimony, and you guys can quote me if I'm wrong, she said that when she said to Trayvon that you need to run, he said, I'm not going to run, and she said, why not? He said, I'm right next to my daddy's house. What does that mean? He was right next to his daddy's house. She is awesome.
Well, since you said I can tell you if you're wrong, I'll tell you if you're wrong.
Okay, hold on a second. John Lieberman. Okay, let's give everybody a chance to talk tonight. John Lieberman?
I have to disagree when Frank says that her testimony was contrived. It's pretty clear that she wasn't polished. She wasn't a coached witness. And sometimes that can come off as credible to jury. The fact of the matter is, this is who you get. You know, she wasn't putting on any sort of facade. She let her demeanor show. And
you ever
sometimes
heard Graf?
That can come off
have you ever
as
heard
credible.
Graf?
Frank, let me
have
finish.
You ever
come
heard
on. Frank, let
have
me
you ever
finish.
Heard Graf? Go ahead. I just want to know, have you ever heard Graf?
You're referring to the fact that she said, and we played it a second ago, that she heard sliding on glass. I think what she was trying to say was something else, and I'll throw it to Dana Zwickel. Do you think that she was trying to say she heard a scuffle when she said, I heard grass?
You know, that's part of the problem with her testimony today. She is the messenger, and she's the main messenger. And if you can't hear her and you can't understand her and you can't follow what her message is, then that's what's going to be a problem for the jurors. You hit it right on the head. What was she really trying to say? Was she trying to say this or was she trying to say that? No one really knows. And yes, she was not polished. And maybe she's been harassed. Maybe she hasn't been harassed. But the bottom line is the prosecution should have, you know, prepared her better and made her a better witness. She came off as disinterested at times, cavalier. I thought that she was very rude to defense counsel who
Tanya
was not
Young
to her.
Williams.
Well, listen, I think that this young lady came off as just what she is, a very young lady who hasn't been in this position before, in a very tough spot, and she's still traumatized by the situation. Excuse me, Mr. Taft, you're going to respect me whether you want to or not. This young lady is traumatized, and therefore you see her nervousness.
She
and what I liked about her, Jane, most importantly, like this, there were no facades. You get what you get, and I think she was credible, and her testimony was consistent and believable.
She lied under oath to the...
All right, folks, we have more callers. We're going to open the line. Once again...
Let's go to 702.
Well,
sounds crazy.
Yeah, but, you know, listen, I don't want to disparage this young woman, although I'm thinking Precious Jr. I'm thinking that because, listen, this is not the time for street shenanigans. And I'm confused by these people who are coming to her assistance as if everything is okay. Where's the respect for this dead young man? Where's the respect for this young man's parents who weren't looking for that? They weren't looking for the street-ish. They weren't looking for that. It amazes me. All I heard, Kathy, was excuse after excuse and victimization. We heard people were asking, "What was she learning disabled?" 100 different things. Is she part Dominican, part Haitian? Maybe it's that. You know, it's cultural. It's generational. Excuse after excuse after excuse, and maybe it's more on the prosecutorial team to sit there and sit this woman down and say, hey, if you're going to protect your homeboy, if you really thought something about him, this is what you need to do. Keep it consistent. This girl used different pseudonyms. She couldn't read what she allegedly signed, a different name on it. She lied about or was confused about the term creepy-ass cracker. That's not racial. Now, black folks are coming out and saying, well, in her world, it's not racial. Okay. Damn, Captain, I hate being this damn smart. I'm telling you, it's a burden. If you sit there, if you're going to ride that this girl was saying this wasn't a racial term, let Paula Deen go. Free Paula Deen then, because she didn't know what she said was racial either. You can't have it both ways, folks. They're saying now, in her world, creepy-ass cracker doesn't mean a racial thing. Just like people use the B word, and I understand that. Some people use the B word and all kinds of vulgar language because that's part of their makeup. So if we're going to give that a pass, we got to give Ms. Deen a pass. Not in my world, but in this new world order, this fun house full of mirrors, when up wrong is right, right is wrong, I'm just saying. 703, what's good, as they see on the street? Tell us who you are, where you're calling from.
It's George from D.C. again. Hey, I want to take a different take on this. First, Lolo Jones is privileged in this way. She got a free education because of her athletic ability, and she's a world-class athlete. So that makes her privileged. Now, I don't know how much money she makes. Yeah, she flopped in the Olympics, but she's a world-class sprinter and was in a certain tax bracket. And what she said was ignorant and dumb, and a lot of people do not need to be on Twitter. Now, to get to this thing, and there's been a lot of grounds covered. At the end of the day, the girl should have been coached. That's obvious. But I'm in D.C., which is the capital of lawyers. I mean, I throw a rock, I'm going to hit 10 lawyers before the rock hits the ground. And I spoke to a lot of them. And he said, at the end of the day, she could have been a Harvard lawyer, you know, very polished, and just set up to fail. Now, I can agree with you to a point that, you know, a percentage of Black America was probably embarrassed, but at least she was up there testifying in the world of the no snitch that's killing our people left and right. At least she was up there. I don't have a crystal ball. I don't. You know, you get what you get. I don't want to get into the cultural, the colorism, the elitism that's been hurled at this young lady. It reminds me of the Langston Hughes poem, Just Be Simple. You know, the Black person come from a country and people from the larger cities look down upon them. But maybe, you know, strip away the street shenanigans, strip away something else, and maybe that's her survival mechanism down there. I'm not making an excuse for it, Beaver, but, you know, you're looking at it from a New York perspective. You're not in that small Florida town where people may have to have different survival mechanisms to get through. I'm not excusing her lack of polish of the English language, but that might be her cloak to survive in that area as a young Black person. I'll shut up and listen.
All right, George, listen, I appreciate your viewpoint, but my only issue is that when Dr. Cosby came out and spoke about what's going on and talked about this dirty language, I'm sorry, dirty laundry, excuse me, when he talked about this stuff and we're trying to elicit correction, we're trying to help because we're pointing out, listen, I'll give you a better example. When Angelina Jolie was told by her doctor that you look like you might have the marker for breast cancer, I'm pretty sure she didn't love the guy. Okay, no one ever loves the messenger or the doctor that provides the diagnosis. They don't like it. But if you're looking for improvement, you better follow the prescription. This is what myself, this is what the captain, this is what Dr. Cosby is doing. No one else wants to say anything. The only good thing out of the Bush administration, the only good thing that came out of that administration was the adage, the bigotry of low expectations. And to go into this thing about woe is this girl, this poor girl, and to allow her to remain with this lot in life is the worst thing anyone could ever do to somebody. It's saying that you can never be, you wouldn't do this to a handicapped person. Handicapped people don't want to be treated like handicapped people. Why are we treating this young woman like she's handicapped? We can't tell the woman, your shirt tail is up, you know, your blouse is showing. This is what we're doing. This young man deserved better. His parents deserved better. And coming up with excuses, and now someone is too privileged, not Black enough, too Black, makes too much money. With that mindset, we can never tell Black folks that they need correction. Because somebody will say, you're not in my place to tell me that. That's
hey,
my
dude,
only problem. Somebody has to say something.
What's the bigger crime?
We have a minute. Hold on. We got a minute. I'm going to take one more call. Unfortunately, we have to probably do this for the next show. 347, your thoughts, and then we got to get on out. What's up?
Hello?
347. Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, you can.
Hi, my name is Utopia, calling from Queens, New York.
Okay.
I wanted to address something you mentioned earlier about how people are judged based on the company that they keep. But in this situation, I think that is much bigger. I think that because Trayvon Martin is a Black guy in a suburban neighborhood, automatically it's a negative assumption. And for that, I believe that Zimmerman found that as an excuse to do what he did, and hopefully the Trayvon Martin family will find justice in this situation, because I do believe that Black people, especially Black men, are wrongly accused based on the way they're dressed or certain neighborhoods that they're in. And I don't think that that's an excuse to wrongly accuse or harass or forcefully, I don't know what the right word to say, but forcefully. I'm sorry, you could go. You were just going to say something?
Yeah, I want you to take this. I want you to listen to me very closely, because actually we're going over the time, Captain, but let's give another 5 minutes, and they'll listen to this in the podcast format. We're going to take this call. We're going to speak to this young lady, and then we're going to close the shop. I want you to say, I want you to listen to me very closely. I mean no ill will toward you, but I want you to understand something clearly. And I hope you continue listening to our show. The show is called Afro Nerd Radio for a reason. You must understand, I'm pretty sure you understand, there are different types of black people from different perspectives, different types. Not everyone rolls in a kind of ghetto type of format. I'm sure you know, I'm a New Yorker like you're a New Yorker. You go to Wall Street, you see well-heeled, educated black folks. People try to say that President Obama was an authentic, was not an authentic black person, but I've known plenty of well-educated black men that spoke just like she, like he did. Michelle Obama is not an anomaly. She is a well-heeled, educated black woman. There are different types of black people. What I'm saying is this, and you know this being in New York, do you remember hearing these rash of crimes where people pretended to be police officers, where they literally rode around in police cars and wore police uniforms, and people were ended up getting robbed because they thought that the person was a police officer? Do you remember those cases?
Yes.
Okay. Why do you think that is?
Well, for one, because the people assume that they were police officers because of the uniform and the cop car you said that they were in.
Because of how they look. All I'm asking for, if black, some of our black folk, our black men specifically, if we're going to keep it 100 and be real about it, some of us are looking like the criminal. And it makes it indistinguishable for some of the police. They have to read minds all of a sudden. We don't want to, in Queens, in Manhattan, I see legions of black men whose appearance looks like crap. And we, black and brown men, they don't want to, if they're going to be adult young men, you have a black president now who looks clean as a tack. That is your, that should be your symbol. But you don't want to look, you say, my president's black. You heard all the rap songs. My president's black. My president's black. If that's the case, why don't you want to look like him? We're not representing anymore. And this is real. And if you get stopped and frisked, try not to look like the profile. They caught a woman in Westchester, Miss, a white woman who was selling, who ran a major marijuana operation. Okay? They weren't looking for her. Someone dropped dimes. She kept marijuana plants in some warehouse in Queens. Right? She drove a Mercedes. She took her her kids to horse riding lessons. She had a mansion in Westchester. White woman. Guess what? No one was looking for her because she didn't fit the profile. If you don't want to get stopped by the police, stop looking like the profile. It's simple and plain. Some of what we're doing, and I don't think you can deconstruct my argument, some of what we're doing, we're doing it to ourselves because we refuse to tailor our look a little bit, to tone it down. We've been rocking pants below the waist for 20 years now, 25 years. Why don't some styles just go out of – why doesn't it go out of style? We're keeping it like – we're going to look like this for another 30 years? We got to be honest. No one respects us. We don't respect each other. We're killing each other in the streets. In Queens, you know this. In Queens, a young woman on one of the local buses was shot in the head. Another woman in Brooklyn, young girl, was paralyzed. The world is seeing this, and now you're expecting, and we're committing crimes in, with more numbers, and we don't want to be stopped on that because we don't want to admit the numbers are not matching. Way too many numbers for the amount of black people that are here in New York City. If we're going to stop this, let's stop fitting the profile. That's all I'm asking. Your thoughts, and then we're going to close shop. You're welcome to agree or disagree.
No, I agree with you, but in terms of the appearance, I believe that a lot of us, especially young men, black men, are influenced to believe that the baggy pants are a trend because of hip-hop artists that most of us are influenced by wear baggy pants. So baggy pants is more of a trend type of thing, because I see other races of people wearing
baggy pants as well, and they're not profiled or stopped by police officers. So I think that it has a lot also to do with being black as well.
That, listen, that is the reality. That it doesn't mean that it's right. See, we can live in a world of what we want it to be or what it is. What it is that black and brown folk fit a certain profile with those clothes on. Now, if we turn things around and try to confuse people a little bit, then we can see how it goes down. Educated black men who have a certain look are not getting stopped like Trayvon was. Not really. We know who was getting stopped and frisked. It's not the Urkel type of cat. It's not, if we're going to keep it honest. And we have to deal
right.
with the fact that some of these high-profile crimes where people are getting shot in the head, they're getting paralyzed, you got gang violence, it is wild in Brownsville right now. Postal workers refuse to even deliver mail in Brownsville, miss. They're scared. We're pretending like this isn't going on. I'm down with Bloomberg. I'm sorry. Pull Jaquan over. If he doesn't want to conform, if he wants to look like a roughneck, that's the price you pay. As always,
right.
We appreciate support. I'm sorry, you can make one more point.
No, I agree with you, 100%. I agree with Bloomberg that something needs to be done about the jeans, the baggy jeans, because it is bringing off the wrong message. And obviously a lot of black men are being stopped because of this. Like you said, because of the appearance of black men has a lot to do with that as well. So I also agree with Bloomberg in that respect.
Thank you so much. And one thing, I'm just going to close it out on this. Let's just do a test. Can we test some of the brothers out here to see? Let's just change the style. Let's just flip the script and see what would happen if all of a sudden it became vogue that there's a new look in town and we look so not like, that's so not like they think us we're going. T.I. is wearing glasses, like glasses and ties now, like he's an IT guy. Let's go with that look, the nerd look, and see what happens. That's all. We haven't tested it yet. Let's test it.
Okay.
As always.
Maybe
continue this. Yeah.
I'm saying maybe it's because it's not considered cool to dress that way, because a lot of black men, again, listen to hip hop and they are influenced by the hip hop trend, and maybe they want to be cool and fit in and be popular, and maybe because the tie and the glasses are not as cool as the baggy pants and the gold teeth and the jewelry, maybe that has also a lot to do with it.
I'll say one
thing. You know what?
One thing. Then we'll get out. I'll say one thing after this. Cool and dumb run hand in hand. Cool and dumb run hand in hand. The world runs on nerds and geeks. You can't do anything without them. But the cool guy, you don't have to have them. You don't have to have cool people on the job. You don't have to. But you need the nerd and the geek. So cool and dumb run hand in hand. And that's it. That's all I wanted to say. And now we have to go. Thank you for calling. 347.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm going to say quickly, going to prison and biting pillows, Captain, not a cool look. I'm sorry. I'd rather be the nerd looking at the next Wolverine film with a beautiful woman with painted toes, of course. I'd rather live that life than be in prison with Shaquan giving me some weird massage. I'm just saying. Continue listening. And again, we play urban alternative here. This is a new black right now. Urban alternative music. Time for hip-hop's got to go. Rick Ross, Lil Wayne, disrespecting Emmett Till, raping your women, not a good look. Next time, folks, Wednesday, Afro Nerd has been real. See you next time. This is Crazy Glue by Fishbone. See you next week.
Just